When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I want to talk to you about rotoballer.com. If you guys know me by now, you've listened long enough, you know I have my written content for DFS and other season-long fantasy products over at rotoballer.com. And if you're still grinding along in the NFL streets, season-long playoffs, DFS for the NFL, don't wait any longer. Go to rotoballer.com, get the NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? Rotoballer's NFL Premium Pass includes lineup tools, projections, and DFS cheat sheets for all formats. Get access to exclusive articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chat rooms. I do the weekly DFS cash game values, even then this Saturday even, doing some extra previews for the week's DFS slates. Come check all that out and join in on the winning and take 50% off any premium pass, not just football. If you want basketball, baseball's coming up, all that good stuff. 50% off any premium pass. Use my promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off. So you get 60% off a premium pass. It's that simple. So get in, get ready, finish the NFL season in a strong, strong way with rotoballer.com, NFL Premium Pass. Already at 50% off now. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off when you purchase. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 435. I got a special guest joining me tonight, first time on Benched with Bubba, to talk some NFBC cut line. We've done a lot of draft champion stuff with some greats in that avenue of things. He's done very well on that as well. But the cut line format is, it's a tricky one. If you're used to your roto formats, this takes a different little animal to you. So I'm really looking forward to this. He's been doing this. We'll get over his history in a minute, but he's been doing it since it started. Let's put it that way. You can find him on Twitter at JonesCurtisW. Cujo himself, Curtis Jones. How we doing, man?
Yeah. What's up, Bubba? How's it going? Looking forward to this.
Good, good. Thanks for joining me, man. This is going to be a lot of fun. You know, like, we've talked about setting this up for a few months now. Like, this has been a thing we've wanted to do, but it's fun, like, listening to Vlad's podcast a few weeks ago with Brock, and they were talking about you. Like, everybody knows Curtis Jones when it comes to cut lines. So let's just get to the brass tacks of it. Like, let's let people know, what's your history like with this, with the NFBC? You know, it's been going forever, but you're not just a cut line guy. I want to clarify that, but this is one thing you do very well. So what's kind of your history in the NFBC?
Yeah, so I've been playing fantasy baseball since college, and was doing pretty well in my home league, which I think is going into its 12th year this year. We do an auction. We have a few keepers each year. Can't keep anybody longer than 3 years, so it's not quite like dynasty, but definitely like your standard home league with guys I've known forever, and doing well in that. So I was like, all right, I'll try out some of this high stakes online stuff. And so on 2014, I started, and I think I started with DCs like everybody does, right? And had some success early on. And then, the cut line started in 2016. So I played in a few cut line leagues then. I think I won back to back in my home league. So I was feeling pretty high on my horse. And I split a main event team with somebody that year, just jumped right in. I should have probably started with some online championships or some of the smaller leagues. But I went in there, and I was actually in the league with Rob Silver the year that he won. I played a little part in that. I think I gave up on John Gray after like a month after he was getting smoked, and Rob picked him up, and then he was awesome the rest of the year. So I you know, took it a little easy on those big leagues for a little while after that, but I kept doing cut line. I did some more DCs, and I started doing an online championship. It was kind of like right in my wheelhouse. I've been doing 12-team, leagues forever with that. And those leagues are a lot of fun. I still play in those. Now I mostly do cut lines early in the season, and then I draft online championships, and then I draft, a couple mains. This year I'm actually going to Vegas for the first time, which I'm super excited about. So I'm going to do a main and one of those $1,500 auction championships. So be my first auction on NFBC. So I'm sure I'll be horrible in the draft, even though I do auctions in my home league, but it'll be a little different sitting, next to Matt Modica and some of those other super good guys that have been around forever.
It is different, that's for sure. But like, you could hold your own. Like you said, you've been doing it for so long. It's not like it's your first auction ever, so that's going to be big. And it's crazy to think about that you literally do almost every format they have. And it's like you go from the DCs, the draft and holds, and you go to your cut lines, your best balls, and you go to your 12 league, 12 team fabs, and you got some 15 team fabs. You cover like the entire gamut of it. And you've probably heard so many people talk about it. It's some people like focus on just kind of like one area because OC fab is so much more different than the 15 team main event fab. And then, obviously we'll get to the cut line fab. That's a whole nother animal. And so it's kind of hard to wrap your head around the different formats. How do you transition to that? Even like drafting's even different. How do you kind of get the headspace? It might be a simple answer for you, but to me, it's kind of interesting because I did a bunch of, ECs already, like between 12 and 15s. And I'm taking a break now because I'm getting ready to do fab leagues. I need like refocus type thing. How do you kind of keep shifting from different formats? Because that's a quite a skill, I believe.
I do try to kind of phase draft season. I never really stop listening to podcasts and prepping. And I've got my notebook that I like take all my notes on as I'm listening to podcasts and sort of building my draft board. But I really try to do cut lines and other best balls, some of those best ball 12s and stuff that they started doing either last year or the year before. And I try to do that all early. So I do a lot of cut line leagues. I'm usually in the 20s the past few years. I'm on draft number 7 right now for cut line, which is not as much as some of those crazy DC guys, but it's a fair amount. But I try to get, most of those in before I get to those online championship drafts because you really have to change. You're in the cut line and it's a points league. It's a best ball league. And the NFBC does, like ideal lineups each week. So they literally make your lineup the best it can be for that week. And multi-position eligibility works. Whereas on Fantrax, where a lot of people also play, a guy is like just a second baseman or just a shortstop. So, Jake Cronenworth is eligible at three positions in NFBC, and you really pay for that, especially in cut line. And he's going like, I don't know, 40 spots, and he would go higher than he would go if he was just a second baseman. But you're kind of paying for that flexibility that allows you to get that ideal lineup that's a little better. So I'm really like I'm there. I'm trying to, build the best team, and I take a lot of hitters early and a lot of pitchers late. And whereas in fab leagues and in online championship with an overall, I'm really trying to stay balanced throughout the draft. We all know saves have been crazier than ever this year. I haven't done an OC, even though I've been tempted. Usually
Yeah,
try to work
I
a
was
little
very tempted
longer.
with these, like with these 11:30 Eastern ones. They started dropping. I'm like, oh, that's like kids are
Really
in
don't like
bed, like
it.
so close. I'm like, I wanted to wait till March though. Like, this is close.
I know. And those drafts are just so they're so different, right? Like you've got to get your speed early, you got to get your saves early, taking pitchers higher. I'll usually take like one good pitcher in a cut line early, unless they really drop. I try to like let the draft come to me. It'll come with like a set. I'm doing this every year, but every round. But it's such a different mindset, like you were saying. And then main events are a whole different ball game where pitchers get pushed way up. The 15 team, league, it gets really thin at the back end. You kind of like the last couple of rounds, you're like, all right, I'm gonna take this spot starter for week one in my last round and then replace him in fab. And that's why you have people that, concentrate on those leagues. I think your boy Toby, I think only plays in 15s.
He
Three
prefer yeah.
people only plays in 15s. Like there's people that just say, like, oh, fab is so different, the league is so different. I just can't, I can't switch. I have more success in OCs than I do in mains, but I like the competition. I like the challenge in mains. I cashed in my first main last year. I'd been in first
Nice.
place for a lot of the year and I ended up in third, but I was still happy to like get that first cash under my belt. So And last year was actually my best year ever, even though I didn't make it into the top 20 in cut line. I've had two top 10 overall finishes in cut line in two different years, I think 2019 and 2020. And then last year, I had my most successful year just because I finished third overall in the online championship out of, you know, 24.
Outstanding.
You know, famously, some guy named Phil finished in second. And
who's that right guy? Has he been on any podcasts, or is he anywhere these days? I've never heard of him.
He's here. He's doing his tour, and we are all taking notes.
Yeah, exactly.
He's giving away too much, but, you know, he's giving away some tidbits. And,
yep.
I mean, super guy. I was cheering for him and everything else. I just
heck yeah.
He had let me stay in second.
It showed like everybody, there's so much competition, you know, some guys don't get along with some guys, just the way life works. But yeah, like there wasn't many people you didn't find like the last month rooting for Phil to like do the inevitable, like the impossible.
Yeah,
like everybody was around. If you pretty much, if you weren't like in second or third or whatever, like if you didn't have a chance at it, everyone's rooting for him. It was like, yeah, just go get it, man. Do it. It was awesome.
And he told me, you know, a couple weeks before, he's like, I'm coming for you. You know, we were like DMing on Twitter, and he's just like, if I shoot the moon in pitching, you know, I can make a move. And I was, you know, I was in first, and then like, I don't know, maybe two or three weeks left in the season, Fesler passed me. And I, you know, the only position I wasn't all the way at the top in was speed. And I tried to like go for the most speed guys, and it just didn't work. In the last 2 weeks, I didn't hit at all. I mean, yeah, I was like getting three hits a night, like two bombs and a steal on a week. I mean, the last 2 weeks just totally collapsed. And Phil shot the moon in pitching. I mean, just like Logan Webb and Ranger Suarez and like guys he picked up, they just killed it.
Yep, that's the way it works, though. It's like
there's
always like some luck that's involved. There's a lot of skill too, and he's a smart man. Like that's why I always like I clarify it, because I think we all admit there is a lot of luck that takes place. Like you have to avoid injuries, you have to do this, but like you know what you're doing. What Phil did with it, like there was a method of the madness too. Like and he's talked about it, like you said on some of the shows, when he dropped Walker Buehler or did like things that most people wouldn't do. He had like a logistical step by step of why he did it. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. That works.
Right.
Yeah. And you didn't just like say like screw it, I'm dropping him. No, he had a reasoning behind it. So it made sense. But back to you. And let's you mentioned you did well in the cut line, the OC last year, you've done well in the DCs. When you're transitioning from these, and again, we're going to get strictly cut line pretty soon, but I want to kind of talk some other stuff here for a bit. I like the way you said it. Like you find like you have more fun, I guess, and more success in the 12s, but you like the competition in the 15s. And I echo that sentiment. Like you said it much better than I said it before. I always say like, I like the 12s because I can go on a fab, like when a guy gets hurt and there's like options. So it's still kind of fun. Where like at a 15, if you lose, like a guy gets hurt, the replacement value sucks, and then you have to overpay for them, and you're doing all the like it just it kind of feels depressing after a while. In certain leagues, where the 12s, you're kind of all like, I picked up Joey Votto in one, like I took Chisholm in one, like there's always guys that are kind of sitting around you can do things, and you're never really out of it until at least later in the year. Where a 15, like if you get a couple injuries early, it's tough.
I mean, you replace Lindor last year with Edmundo Sosa. I'm done. And if you take a couple pitching injuries in a main, it's over.
Yep.
You just like early on, you know, your pitching looks good and a couple of your guys gets hurt and a closer goes down. And I had one of my main that finished in fifth last year where I ruined or wasted the best offense I've ever put together in a main. I mean, it was awesome. And my pitching was just a disaster. Yep. I mean, I drafted Rosenthal. I had like seven. I think W was going through the same thing. I remember listening to your podcast, and I mean, I had seven saves going into the All-Star break.
Yep. And Toby,
ratio sucked on top of it. So it was like, pitching was just
gone. Yeah. Toby, I think he almost went like 2 months without one save or something. Yeah. It was just him. I remember Jen said talked about it. It was a wild one.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, in an OC, you know, 2 months ago, like you could have picked up. I mean, these guys are sort of available in mains, but just so hard to get them. But you could pick up Floro and Finnegan, and like all these guys were getting new saves. And in OCs, there's only two or three guys in the league in the last 2 months that are going after saves.
Yep.
In main, it's always six, seven, eight, nine guys in your league chasing.
Yep. And you're paying like crazy. It's just a different beast. And it's like I try to, you know, get guys on to talk fab on it and stuff, but it's hard to narrow it down because it's so league dependent. It sounds like lazy, but that's why when Toby and I do the weekly shows during the season, we go over like the fab, and it's just like the lowest bid was $1 in one league. This other league was like $380.
Those podcasts are still, I mean, I know it feels like, you know, fruitless on your end, but like we really appreciate those podcasts. I mean,
It helps me out a ton. I appreciate it.
And, yeah. You know, I listen to the one on The Athletic that goes through like the, you know, fab for that weekend. And like, it's a lot of prep and I spend all week like taking my notes, but you don't want to miss anything.
Yeah.
Certainly don't want to miss anything easy, like the low hanging fruit that you're like, oh, I can't believe I forgot about that guy.
The easy one, dude. Like, I totally get it. And that's what's funny, because I know people probably don't care about this stuff, but I'm having fun chatting about it. But
yeah,
I do 2 to 3 podcasts for season long a week. I write articles. I still listen to podcasts every day. I subscribe to Vlad's article. Like, just same thing. I don't want to miss something. Like, there's so much going on and so many different things. And if I'm going to be the first to admit, there's a lot more smart people than me doing this. So it's just, you know, if you can't learn from other people, you're just kind of fooling yourself is the way I look at it. So there's a ton of great stuff. So I like how you said that. Like, you're checking all your boxes, because there's so many things that could take. Plus, you got kids. We have life. There's life.
Yeah.
So, exactly. But before we get, I think the last thing I got for you here, you mentioned you got your notebook, you got your player pool. How do you differentiate from different formats? Do you try to diversify? Do you have a lot of similar players in those formats? Like, how do you go about that?
Yeah, I don't go about, you know, early on in the year trying to diversify. I get a lot of the same kind of late guys, but I try not to go, you know, crazy. You know, my top owned guy will probably be in the 55% to 60% range, and it'll be a late guy. Last year, unfortunately, it was like Scott Kingery and Hunter Dozier, and they were a disaster. They were kind of my late, you know, two of my late cut line guys. I did, you know, I had a bunch of Freddie Peralta, which was great, but you know, it'll be later guys that you tend with those like really high percentages. I do try to diversify a little bit early on. Cut line, you don't have a KDS. So you just kind of get randomly assigned draft positions, and you can find yourself with like a bunch of eights and nines and tens in a row. I try to just make, there's a lot of those like outfielders going at the end of the round and endeavors. And I just try to like mix it up. So I've got, you know, I've got a Trout Acuna team. I've got a, you know, a Devers, Kyle Tucker team, you know, I've got a Jose Ramirez, something else team. I try to get like some of those duos early and switch it up a little bit, but by the maybe 5th or 6th round, like if it's my guy, it's my guy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna end up with a lot of Trevor Story, for instance, this year. It's going on like the 50s and cut lines. Like if he keeps going in that 6th round, like I'm gonna take him every time he's there, basically. But that won't end up being more than say 40-50% just because it's so early on. Whereas guys got an ADP of 240, I can sort of continuously take him at 220 or something like that that works.
Gotcha. And it's hard right now because usually, you know, there's always news going on. Guys are getting ready for spring training. So ADP fluctuates a lot more, but we're kind of stagnant because there's nothing going on. So I think there's some movement in ADP, but it's not a ton.
Yeah. The best news we get is like, oh, Dan Straley signed a minor league deal today. I mean, that's not really going to move a lot. You know, he might jump 50 spots in DCs, but he's not really getting drafted in most cut lines.
So. Like the most news we get now is like, hey, Ronald Acuna, he took more batting practice.
He was hitting missiles.
Yes.
I know it doesn't really matter, and I know that's what he does, but that bat, like if I was inside that batting cage, I'd be terrified.
Yeah, he's locked in right now. Like, I know some people say it's like, well, I want to see him, you know, cutting and stuff. I get it. I get that. But he can also DH for a couple months. Like, the thing I've said the whole time with Ronald Acuna, like if you're drafting him, you have to understand he's probably not running for at least the first half of the season. Like, like that's just the reality of it. So you're not going to get, you know, 30 steals, but you might get 15 to 20 by the end of the season, which is
pretty cool. He was going for 40-40.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Trust 40-40. Me. I was team Acuna pick one in recent years. And I got
exactly.
So
I don't think I've actually gotten him in my first, you know, 7 cut lines, but I'm going to make sure to have, you know, a couple in case he goes nuts.
Yeah, I feel bad for passing on him in some DC so far. Like, I'm not happy about it. So,
I heard somebody lately said, I want my first round pick to play on opening day. And, like, there's a lot to be said for that. And cut line, like, you want to get hot and healthy kind of in those later cuts, especially, you know, you got to stay in that top, I think it's the top 100, and then it's the top 20, and then the top 20 in that last round, like, all 3 of you or all 20 of you are in the over on your cash in and you want to get to the top, but you got to get there. You know, you got to finish top 2 in your league to get to that first top cut. And the next 3 will be in like the wild card round, but the wild card round is kind of dead. a few people move up to the top tier, but it's really hard and it's kind of a crapshoot.
Well, and if it's like I remember, like, okay, the wild card round can move into the next round for the top tier, but you're so far behind in the top tier, advancing to the next round after that's pretty much impossible.
Yeah,
so it's like really you're kind of drawing dead.
Wild card back into that top 20, in other words. Yeah. They do pay out, like, you know, the top five of the final wild card, something, you know, a couple thousand bucks or something. So it's there. I mean, yeah, it's nice. I'm not turning down a couple thousand dollars, right? But, like, you know, you want to be in there for that 75,000, I think it is, next year for top prize. So.
Well, all right, let's talk cut line because this is fun. It's a different format. Like most of the time on this show, we talk 12-team, 15-team, roto and stuff like that. Like I said, we've been talking DCs a lot because that's just kind of the season. But cut line's cranking up. Vlad did a draft. Matty Wood did a draft live on YouTube. You've been doing, you said, I think, six drafts so far.
Yeah, I'm in my seventh. I was in Vlad's, the Beat Vlad live stream.
That's right. So you're in your seventh. I was looking in the lobby. There's a lot in the lobby, so you can sign up for those pretty soon. Let's kind of get into it. So it's a 10-team league, as you said, and it's best ball. So kind of explain to everybody how the best ball point system differs kind of from your roto formats.
Yeah. So, you know, it was originally designed, you know, by a couple of the, you know, longtime guys, Todd Zoll and KJ Duke are both kind of like legends in the industry. And KJ Duke is one of the best players out there in every format. He dominates in the cut line. He dominates in the DCs. You don't want to see him in your main event. I mean, he's one of those like three or four or five guys. But they designed it to mirror 5x5 roto, which I think is super helpful because if you're going over there and you're drafting on Fantrax and people love those best ball leagues, but it is a different game. You know, pitching gets moved way up. And like I said before, you know, each guy only has their one position. And, you know, I used to do it just because I was a draft fanatic. I'd play a couple leagues over there and I'd find myself like, just out because I wasn't adjusting my draft board. And, you know, they say know the game, right? I didn't know the game. Like you're dead money against, you know, the Rhodes and the guys that are playing all those Fantrax leagues. Dead money if you don't know what you're doing. So cut line, it's not exactly like 5x5. It has fluctuated as stolen bases have become more rare and saves have become more rare. But they have adjusted. I think they've adjusted at least once to try to get back there. The correlation is tight enough that I don't change my draft board. I build one draft board. I do draft differently because, you know, stolen bases tend to be after the first like six rounds, the guys that are getting the stolen bases tend to not be as good a hitters, more likely to lose their job. You know, Garrett Hanson has second base and outfield position, but like he's never been a bulk player. And you just don't want a guy that's going to be getting like 300 at bats. Yeah. So, you know, the scoring system is points based. It's, you know, I actually had it written down so I could, you know, spit it out, but, an at bat's minus one and a hit's four. So you go one for four and you've got nothing, I guess. Right.
Break even.
Yeah. So, but you know, runs two, home runs six, RBIs two, stolen base five. So a solo home run's like 13 points. And then on the pitching side, you get a point for each out, so 3 points for an innings pitched, and then minus one for a hit allowed, minus or a walk allowed, minus two for an earned run, one for a K, six for a win, eight for a save. So, you know, steals and saves are still valuable, and if a guy has one of those three save weeks, I mean, that's big. Huge. Like, Liam Hendricks had a monster season last year. Rafael Iglesias had a monster season last year. So, it's not that you want to avoid those guys, but we all know it's something like 50% of closers lose their job every year. Yep. So that you don't really want to pay up for them in the same way that you're doing in roto leagues. And the way the best ball works is the NFBC system, just at the end of the week, it's a full week. So it's not like split into Monday to Thursday and then Friday to Sunday, but in that full week, they will just set your optimal lineup. And that's just straight up. It's the same 23 starting positions that all the NFBC leagues have. So nine pitchers and I don't know, my brain doesn't work right now. 14 hitters, and they'll just put them all in there. And then Shohei Ohtani is DH and pitcher eligible, so they will flip him back and forth depending on what he is.
So you don't have to even decide. They do it for
you. Don't have to decide, right? Yes. So he's a totally different player in cut line.
Yeah, big time.
You can make an argument for him number one overall.
I'm about to say that changes everything.
Everything versus like at the sixth or seventh pick in an OC or a main, I'll struggle with that decision because, I mean, you're just kicking yourself, right? You put him at DH that week and he throws, you know, seven innings and has 12 Ks or something like that, but only, I don't know, hits 250 with one home run. You're like, man, I really missed out on these pitching stats.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's big. That's big. Huh. So you mentioned the steals guys early, so you're kind of pushing them up. Who else do you push up in drafts compared to like a regular like OC main event type deal?
So, you know, you push up multi-position eligibility because of that system kind of putting them wherever they need to be, and that lets your lineup sort of have more options to fit that puzzle piece together. But the secret's out. You know, the multi-position guys are going higher, say 20, 30 picks higher than they're going in the DCs. So you're paying up for it. So it's not as much. I think a few years ago, it was a little bit more under the radar, and you could kind of target enough of those guys to give all your hitters kind of ultimate flexibility to not leave like a big week on the bench, because, you know, it's the last thing you want to do is see some 30-point thing on the bench because your middle infield's already filled and you got Nelson Cruz at util or something like that. So that kind of secrets out. I tend to I think home runs kind of come in bunches. So you like the power hitters, right? You know, the Aaron Judges, the Stantons, the guys who can hit, I don't know, 5-6 home runs in a week, it seems like. But, you know, as far as value, it's mostly the same guys that you're valuing in Roto that you're valuing here. And while I would say, like, I've never been a big, like, Starling Marte or Whit Merrifield fan in Cutline, Whit Merrifield just always seems to have second base and outfield eligibility. So that makes him pretty valuable because, you know, flips between a lot of different positions.
Yeah, because he hasn't hit a ton of homers, but he gets the, you know, 25, 30 bags, and he can play both spots for you, like you said. So that, especially when he's still stolen bases as much as they
are. They're valuable. You know? Yeah,
very valuable.
For the stolen bases, they still add up too. So.
And this is one of those, like, would a guy like Mondesi be more intriguing in this format, knowing that if he has, like, a banged-up week, someone else fills in for him or something?
Yeah, so Mondesi is interesting. I probably had too much Mondesi 2 years ago, because he was, you know, falling so far past where he would normally fall, because it's not like stolen bases aren't going to win you the league, but man, when he gets hot, he goes nuts. So if you manage to have a team in that top 20 at the end in September, when he always seems to, you know, bring us all back in by stealing 13 bases and hitting 6 home runs, I mean, that's a monster month, right?
Yeah,
but at the same time, you only get 2 fad periods in Cutline. And you've got to be hot and healthy at the end. So the guys that are just always seem to be hurt, I mean, you need bulk, right? You need guys to be playing. You want guys playing every day. And it's okay to have like a Lamont Wade that's kind of getting platooned, because especially him, because he's first base and outfield eligible. But you don't want too many guys in platoons or guys that are just seem to be hurt all the time.
No, that makes sense. And the Wade ones, the eligibility he gets, and, you know, if it's one of those – if it's a week with a lot of right-handed pitching, he's going to play a lot, so he's going to be put in your roster. And if it's a week they face too many lefties, you don't have to worry about him. So
it's fine. Yeah, and you're drafting him late, right?
Very
late. To give you an idea of Mondesi, his ADP in the last month of cut lines is 72.
Okay.
I would imagine it's probably in the 50s for DCs.
Yeah.
I'm retired from DCs, but something like that. So you can see that you're getting a discount on him because he's just hurt a lot.
Makes a lot of sense. And it's that's kind of one of the mindset changes, I guess, you have to kind of make, is you need that more, I guess nothing's ever reliable, but you want more reliability is what it comes down to.
You want reliability. You like streaky, because they, like you said, like a streaky pitcher, you know, like the, you know, those high K kind of high variability pitchers, they get bombed, they're on your bench.
Yep.
You can't have too many of those guys, you know?
Yeah. We take a couple of gambles and stuff. So I'll ask you that in a minute, but let's go back to, it's 10 teams. How many rounds, how many players, what's your roster kind of look like?
Yeah. So it's 42 rounds. And I tend to, you know, I've got my like normal grid up that I always have. Like I tend to go, 18 pitchers, 24 hitters.
Okay.
So there's some teams, like some guys that are play a lot of cut lines that like more pitchers than that. But this is, I fluctuate a little bit and go on, you know, one or two more pitchers, but I always seem to end up thin on the hitting side. So I like to try to get 4 guys eligible at each of those infield positions and catcher. And even though I've only got 8 outfield slots on my like grid that I'm trying to fill out, 9 or 10 guys eligible in the outfield, just with guys like Wade or Kettle Marte or, you know, any of the guys that have outfield eligibility along with something else.
Okay, no, that makes sense, because that's one thing I'd like to pick the brain of for the DC is like how many X like guys want 10 outfielders, or they want this, that, or the other, because there is a method of the madness. Like you said, the last thing you want to do is kind of thin yourself somewhere and you all of a sudden you guys got hurt and you have nobody playing.
You
and
can't take just, zeros.
I mean, and that just completely takes
zeros are it. Dead. I mean, you could take a zero at a catcher spot or something, but if you're taking zeros, you're dead.
So, okay, interesting. So you got the 42 players, 420 players get drafted. It's obviously not like the other bulk leagues that we're playing and that really, really load up on guys. I guess a main event would be 450.
Yeah, a few more, you know, OCs and less. So
about 30 more. So not bad. Decent sized player pool. Now you mentioned it's $175 to enter, but you get two fab periods. Yeah. And this is where it gets fun because, you know, it's still $1,000 in our other leagues, but that's a weekly deal, so you kind of plan accordingly. Yeah. This is like go for broke, and this is where I just get lost as I'll get up. So how do you approach fab?
A ton of time, you know, and a ton of back and forth. And there's another guy, Jason Koops, who's on on Twitter and plays a ton of cutline leagues, and we talk all the time about cutline in general, but like especially in the couple weeks leading up to those fab periods, like who are you looking at, who are you dropping, who's available, like, and it, a lot of times it's you got to cut that dead weight. You kind of have to be ruthless. And most of the time, that's the right answer. I probably, in hindsight, shouldn't have dropped Franmil everywhere last year because he came back like 2 weeks later and he raked when he came back. But you just can't keep a bunch of red suitcases on your bench because you have to avoid those zeros. You got to give yourself more options, and there are always people available. But those two fab periods you're talking about, one of them super early. So it's this year, it's Tuesday, April 12th. One good thing, they run them on Tuesday nights instead of Sunday nights. So you get a couple extra days. You also get a free look, which a lot of people don't think about, because Monday and Tuesday games do count. How much you should weigh that, you don't know, but they will sort of get shoved into your lineup if they've hit three home runs in those 2 days or something.
Interesting. Like that.
But so first one's super early. So I tend to spend big in that first period, but I'm also doing, say, you know, 24 cut line teams that range from late November or December to all the way up into March. And so you tend to have more guys to replace in those early teams that you've drafted. And sometimes I'm only replacing two or three guys in a team that I've drafted in March, like a late pitcher injury, or this guy I thought was going to be the closer. I took a late stab at him. He's not. Relief pitchers that are not closing, valuable in main events as fill-ins, kind of worthless in cut lines.
Yeah, it makes
sense. You're not getting saves or wins. I mean, Colin McHugh probably put up good points last year, but nobody had him on the team.
Yeah.
You know? So on teams that need it, that have 6, 7, 8 spots that I'm filling in, I'm spinning big in that first period. And there's a couple reasons. Those guys are going to help you all year. You know, you're going to get like your Tyler O'Neill's, your Akil Badu's, or, you know, those guys early, your Dallas Garcia's. I think they will kind of win. Garcia and O'Neill were like the two big names early on. They're going to help you all year. And by the time you get to that second one, which this year is on June 7th, half the league is dead because that first cut happens, say, a month after that. Okay. Half the league knows they've really got no shot. Or maybe they're not paying attention, which, hey, join my league.
Exactly.
You want to quit mid-season? Great. But you can get a lot of value in that second period for cheap. Now, there are guys like this past year, like if you wanted Luis Garcia, like you needed $350. In my later ones, I had $350. In my early ones, I might only had $200. Like I said, you get that same $1,000. So you really want to spend a lot of time picking out who you're going to drop, who you're bidding on. You've got like these huge things. I mean, just
a lot of options.
Tendencies. You can't miss, right? Especially in that second one, spend every dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
20 contingent bids. You can't take it with you, but you also can't mess up. You try to spend $1,001, it's kicking out that last bid. Yeah. So, you know, I've got my Excel spreadsheet up. I've stacked.
That's
all
the
my
hardest part, man.
And I have messed up with 24 leagues. I mean, I've messed up and left myself a dollar, not gotten my last guy. I mean, I try not to, obviously, and I double and triple and quadruple check it. But especially when you're making those late changes.
Oh, yeah. You
know, so by Sunday, I kind of want to have everything set up. Somebody's shoulder falls off on Monday, you're switching it around, or like there's a new closer and I've got to put him into every single one on all the things. And the system's great, but it's just time consuming. If you're only in a couple of them, then it's a little easier, I think, to handle. But you're still going through all that same kind of imagination.
Moving like, around and everything.
You know, what you need to do. But it's very time consuming. It's both like a best ball and kind of low touch, while still those pad periods are so important.
That's what's wild about it, because like you mentioned, the best balls, like I've done so in fan tracks and everything, and different scoring, but same idea. It's like draft and I walk away. Like, here we are. It's what it is. Yeah. But this is kind of fun because, you know, you do have those best ball leagues where, you know, you have those spring training injuries or you have some early injuries and you're sitting there going, well, that was fun, like, because I can't do anything about it. But now you have a couple fab options to go get your O'Neals. Everyone remembers Elias Garcia just going nuts last year and little things like that. And if anything, like you said, is somebody with a pulse that can get rid of the red suitcase, give yourself a chance to get going, that makes it a lot more fun. And but then it also has a twist of, you know, after X amount of time, only the top two advance, so they start cutting people out. And so you still might be out of it in the end type thing, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
When it comes to the fab again, there's probably no exact number here, but do you try to have like a certain amount you have left over for that second run?
No, I mean, I mean, yes and no. I don't want to have less than say 150 to 200.
Okay.
You know, you can get a lot of, you're going to get somebody for $15. Like you can get like sort of lower bids. There's no real floor. But I do want to have 150 to 200. So I can, if there's one guy, you're not going to get that one guy, right? But if there's four good guys, I want to get one of them.
You mentioned the closing situation. And I know it's a question that a lot of people have because of how crazy it is right now.
Yeah.
But in cut lines, like, yeah, saves are great if you have like the Liam Hendricks of the world. But if you're going and grabbing these platoon situations, like you said, it could be a mess. So how do you approach it? Because in theory, you don't have to draft any closers if you don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. And there are literally leagues where I'll draft no closers. And then we were talking about that Vlad league, and I drafted all the closers. I set like the max pick on five of the best 10 closers in that league. I think people sort of went in there and they're like, oh, it's cut line. You know, we don't need closers. They're going too high. And you know, I said, well, I mean, if they're going to drop forever, I'm going to take them eventually.
See, that's good, though, because if you get five of them, like if just two or three of them have a big week because they're on, they're good closers for a reason, like that could add up quickly. Like the idea.
Quickly. And there is a, you know, a school of thought in cut line that you kind of either want none or you do want three, four, or five.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because they kind of, they'll get their two and three save weeks like in bunches and, you know, they're on your bench say a third of the time when they're not really doing anything, but even one save at least gives them a nice little floor.
Yeah.
Right. It's like an 11 or 12 point week. Like that can be your seventh, eighth, ninth pitcher.
Nice. Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. Get them in bulk because instead of having like just like two or three randos and they all like stink for a week.
Yeah.
At least the odds of all five of them stinking, not very good. So
yeah.
when you are drafting pitchers and you know, this kind of could be a DC strategy too, if that works over for cut line. You want innings, so you want guys that are going to rack up innings.
Yeah.
But like, do you get too concerned with like that? Like in DCs, it goes so deep. You're talking about like some garbage, you know, fifth starter on Kansas City. But you're obviously not doing that in a cut line. What's kind of your cutoff point for you? Of okay, we've kind of hit the garbage point. I'm done with this situation.
Yeah, I take. I end up with a lot of like late pitchers. Because in my last four or five picks, probably most of them are going to be pitchers each time. But you do kind of want those guys that'll give you innings and Ks, and they can be more volatile. But say like I'm looking back at this last one. I think this was actually this was that league, the Beat Vlad league. And my last five pitchers are Patino, Alzolay, Rich Hill, Miles Mikolas, and Jake McGee. And if Jake McGee's not closing, I'll drop him in that first April period. It's okay to have like, you know, a couple of those stabs at the end. And if they're not closing, you just drop them. You need some spots anyway, because there'll be some hot new guy you weren't thinking about that got drafted.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions. Do you feel like with that early fab period and so much uncertainty right now, are you seeing yourself taking more chances than you usually do right now, going, you know what, if it doesn't work, I'll just drop them on April 12th. But, you know, with so much uncertainty, yeah. I can strike gold right now, why people are kind of hesitant.
Yeah. So I'm not taking a ton of them, but yeah, like I've got some Finnegans and some Tanner Rainey's, and I've got some Dylan Floros, and I've got some Jake McGee's, and, you know, a couple of each of those guys. Okay. They're easy to drop if they're not closing, but if they are closing, they're valuable, and I'll keep them. Then guys like that, there's another question with kind of the guy who's maybe the sixth starter right now on a team that's not going to run six. So I guess he's not a good example, but I'm thinking about like Reed Detmers.
Yeah.
So like he's got like a lot of kind of prospect type, and James Anderson was talking him up the other day, I think on like the Launch Angle Pod. And so, you know, but if he doesn't open the year in the majors, what do you do in that first bad period? Yeah. And sometimes you hold him, and I held Mackenzie Gore 3 or 4 years ago for the whole year, and I got nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. So I've done less of that as the years have gone on. I mean, if a guy's not going to be playing in April, it's just hard to have him on your team. He's putting naturally zeros on your bench. On the plus side, you're at your most healthy in April. So you don't need that 41st or 42nd guy. But you get to that second fat period of guys not playing, you've got to cut weight. You cut weight. You can't keep it.
So on the flip side of that, are you okay with drafting Bobby Witt right now or no?
I haven't taken him, but I'm okay around like 90 or 100 taking him, I think. But that said, I haven't done it yet. He does, have upside. But if I get one of those first shortstops, I'm not going to back them up with Bobby Witt. If I don't, he falls a little bit, then, yeah. I he's not off my draft board, but I'm also not taking him at ADP. He's got to fall a couple rounds past the – I think it's in the 80s somewhere. I'm not taking him there. I don't think he's a terrible pick, but,
it's tough. But it's like you said, he can't have the dead weight, and there's a good chance he should start early, but it's the Royals, and, doesn't look like the whole, youngster thing is going to get fixed in the CBA. So,
I know. And people held Witt all year last year.
Exactly. Him and Kalenic. And Kalenic was up and down all the time, and he was basically dead weight. Like, there was a lot of that going on. So, prospects are tricky. Like, I'm not a gigantic draft prospect guy in redraft league, so I can only imagine in this type of format. I'm just using my Fantrax experience, and obviously totally correct me if I'm wrong on the cut line, but you mentioned, like, say you take a Bichette early, so you got a pretty solid shortstop that in your head he's probably gonna be your guy 90% of the time when something goes horribly wrong. Like, he's gonna be in there every week. Obviously you have a middle infield spot too, but how quickly are you looking to back up your shortstop compared to like going and getting two third basemen or like positional situations? How do you kind of focus your draft situation different in a cut line compared to like a regular draft?
Yeah. So I'd say in a cut line, I try, like, if I take Jose Ramirez, I am not going to take Devers, even if he makes it back to, say, 14, a couple spots after, which I would love to get him there, but I'd love to pair him with Juan Soto or somebody else from the first round. If they're a couple rounds apart, so say I've got I'm trying to think of a different example, but say I have a Jose Ramirez, I won't shy away from like a Bregman or something in the 80s or 90s, that sort of bigger split. I'm not going to take three good ones. I know you can play them. So if I get Freddie Freeman and then say Jose Abreu falls to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a second first baseman. I haven't done this in A-League, but like, I'm not then going to take Jared Walsh. I mean, you do see it in draft. You'll see somebody that's got, three of those really good shortstops because they are really good, but man, that guy is, you've given your roster so much less ways to make that ideal lineup by having three top 100 players at one position that don't have multi-position eligibility. If you have Tatis, go ahead. Take Story, take Lindor. But I'm not going to take Bichette, and I'm probably not going to take Bichette and Story. I mean, I might, but I'm not going to do it more than once. It does handcuff you a little bit. You try to back up your best guy with sort of your second guy being like down here. And then if you've got one of these guys that's kind of in a fourth or fifth round, maybe you could take a seventh or eighth, ninth round and back him up a little bit sooner. You just want to have your roster have like sort of the best way to make that ideal. And I mean, it's not a huge problem to take those two guys, but it does handcuff you later.
And that's why I wanted to ask, because like you've seen people talk about it, and like it feels like in the Fantrax, I think the multi-position eligibility is not there. It's a weirder situation on building your roster. Yeah. But even like in roto formats, like you'll see people go, I want to grab two of these guys, play one at middle infield, one at shortstop. Yeah. There's a conversation, okay, where you drafted the second one, you could have used a stud third baseman, or you could like, so then it starts hamstringing you that way, like you're saying. And at the same time, sure, you can play all three of these guys. So like the reason why I ask is like, okay, if I have such a stud like Bichette and I go and take like a Story, and something happens to Bichette, it's nice to slide Story in, but then at the same time, you're still hamstring. So that's just an interesting way of thinking is why I wanted to ask you for someone to build the point system over the roto system.
Yeah.
And in reality, like in a fab process in cut line, obviously anything can happen, but do you see it being more like outfielder pitchers that are available, or do you kind of see a whole gamut of things?
Yeah, it's a whole gamut, I think. I mean, you've sort of got your, if you're a 24-18 guy like me, or you're a 22-20 guy, you sort of have that sort of, you want to drop an injured second baseman and pick up a second baseman. You want to drop an injured outfielder and pick up an outfielder. But if you have guys that have picked up extra eligibility, or your lineup's sort of shifted a little bit, you want to make sure you're sort of keeping that three or four at each position. But it's almost always pitcher for pitcher, right? Unless you end up in a weird. But you did have, I mean, you had Jazz Chisholm. I don't know that he was drafted everywhere. Jonathan India was definitely a big pickup last year. You are going to get some, infield positions.
Okay.
Not all outfielders, but obviously ton of pitching, right? Everybody's dropping, especially that second period, everybody's dropping a number of pitchers because guys get
makes
hurt.
Sense.
Guys lose their jobs,
Injuries, losing jobs, new guys. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Back to the hitters outfield, you have like five outfielders, potentially six if the utility situation. Yeah. You said you're going to roster eight, give or take, plus, multi-position guys could lead to nine or 10. Do you see yourself more aggressive on outfielders early in your draft, or is it just kind of, as the flow goes, if it's a shortstop, third base, as long as your grid gets made, you're good, or do you kind of focus on certain positions over others?
I have tried to take one of these early third basemen in cut line. Like, you've got Ramirez, Riley, Devers, Machado. I mean, those guys are studs. There's a lot more question marks after them, but I don't always get them. In my current one, I went Soto, Luis Robert, and Jordan.
So outfielders. Okay.
I don't know that I would do that in an OC. I could not do that in a main. It would be
probably you'd be crippled. You'd be crippled. Yeah. Like your roster would be such a pain to draft. I would hate that draft. Yeah. I'd like put that together in my head.
Yeah, but I have no problem doing that in cut line. I mean, you got to have at least eight outfielders. I mean, eight is kind of bare minimum, right? You got to fill five every week. So you really want 9 or 10 guys that are eligible there. But you got to make the pieces work with that multi-position eligibility. But I don't mind taking three. And I'd take a fourth in the next few rounds if the value were there. If Tyler O'Neill slipped or Cedric Mullins slips, like, I'm going to take them.
I think with the multi-position eligibility options, because there's so many outfield, like middle infield guys, some Wade's middle in, or out corner infield, outfield. But also the fact it's like just wrapping your head around 10 teams. Most people don't do 10 teams anymore.
No.
Like I recommend people go look at boards on the NFBC. They usually always put like top six rounds of drafts and stuff. Just go to the ADP page. I have it up and I've been scrolling it, and it's a lot more hitters than pitchers in the ADP. I'll tell you that right at the top. Yeah.
And your team can be loaded.
That's what I'm saying. Like it's like, I asked the question like, okay, should you focus on this or that? But you might not have to like totally wrap yourself up like you're saying, because you can still get a stud in like round three or four where you never would in another draft. So you got to kind of, you can't just walk into this draft room.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's different. And like I said, in those roto leagues, like I try to stay balanced. So if there's, and I've heard, you know, other people talk about this lately, and I've really been drafting like this for years, but you try to stay balanced so you can take advantage of the values when they're there. Right. And like, I you know, I'm kind of old school. I do it on my notepad as I'm doing it. I've got my draft board, but I'm literally like, okay, I'm high in steals. I need power. Yeah. I'm high in K's and wins. Like, or I've got a really low whip. Like, and I can afford to take like a Robbie Ray guy, right? Like a guy that could blow up my, or Luis Castillo, right? Like, he's always had bad whip numbers. Like, I can afford this kind of guy. Like, I'm kind of keeping that and trying to stay balanced. I'm not worried about staying balanced in cut line, right?
Bingo. That's what I was going to ask you. Like, are you willing to just
available kind of stuff?
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, because it makes total sense in a roto format. I can't, you know, go take four bad whip guys. It's gone. Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
But in this best ball format, if these whip guys still strike out 10 guys a game,
yeah,
and they maybe pick up a win every like three starts or something,
yeah,
we're doing good, right?
Yeah, I mean, you compete in overalls and mains and OCs. Like, protect your average, protect your ratios. I don't care about that here. So it's just a different mindset, and why you need to get these drafts over with before you start those roto drafts.
Yeah, like now I'm getting real itchy to maybe jump in a cut line pretty soon now, because like, yeah, I like this idea of, you know, going get some fun teams built.
It's fun. Cut line drafts are fun, and you can do a bunch of them, and not, yeah, there's two fab periods, but you know, just kind of watch them go.
You mentioned
good at bats do kind of dry up.
Yeah,
so that's why I end up with like a lot of pitchers late, because if you wait to take like, you know, your fourth second baseman or your third or fourth first baseman. I mean, there's a couple first basemen that are interesting late, but like, there are no late interesting middle infielders or third basemen. I mean, Evan Longoria is going pretty late. Like, that's an at bat, but
yeah,
he's not getting 600 at bats this year, right?
No, not at all.
It's tough. It dries up. Like, you're going to end up with I took Paul DeJong in the last round, this past one that just finished, and it might be an easy drop.
Yeah, but you can always find pictures that you're going to get you 5-6 innings to start, sneak into some stuff.
And those
you
guys find are just those available all late, right? Like,
yeah,
Madison Bumgarner is going super late. Like I said, Miles Nicholas, Dakota Hudson, like, there's these guys that are out there that are in the rotation. Merrill Kelly, like, these guys are available in those last few rounds, whereas the hitters in the last few rounds are garbage.
And honestly, it's like, with the lack of information we have, sure, there's going to be some players that we didn't think were going to be starting in the lineup that they're going to be starting all of a sudden. Like DeJong, there's the rumor he might start, he might not start, but if he does, you're getting a steal, because you know what he can do. And if you're not worried about batting average, then you're golden.
Yeah.
Like, he's perfect for this format. But on the flip side, the pitchers, like some of these guys that are question marks, the Merrill Kellys, the Bumgarners, all these guys where they're worried about this, that, and the other. What if they picked up a new pitch this offseason? What if they had a velocity we don't know about yet? So like, these are like the little things. I think you're going to get more kind of that kind of stuff with pitchers than you are with hitters for the most part in this world of unknown.
Yep. And so you take those late stabs, and then, you know, they're easy to drop, right?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I like that quite a bit. Let's see. I'll make sure I cover like, so much cut line stuff here. So you got your grid. Oh, that's what I was gonna ask you. So a lot of people use projections. There's all kinds of projection sites. Some guys will, you know, put their league format. You can put like the scoring system into the Fangraphs calculator or whatever. There's Roto Labs, Baseball HQ, whatever. Yeah. What do you prefer? You don't have to give all your sauce, but what do you prefer?
Yeah. So I've been a long time Razzball reader. I think that's like they've been around a lot long time, and Gray is absolutely hilarious. Like, writes these little blurbs every day, and I've been reading those for I don't actually know how many years. Like, probably right around when they started. I think he started it like during a writer's strike in Hollywood or something like that. So you know, I use Gray's rankings, and Gray and Rudy are the Razzball, you know, co-founders, the two guys, but they're different. They draft very differently. They have different styles, and so you've got, you know, Gray's tiers that are a great kind of way to start for me at least. And then I've got Rudy's projections. So what my draft board ends up looking like is, you know, I've got each player like first base, second base, shortstop, third base. And then to the left, I've got a few columns of like rankings. And so I usually, on the hitting side, lately it's been Gray, Rudy, and then Vlad Sedler, and then ADP for the format that I'm drafting in. That's usually like, that lately has been my thing. And then I kind of color code and put some, you know, notes from different podcasts in there, and I move guys up and down But I always had those numbers in there so I can kind of see where people think about it. And then for pitching, I do it a little bit differently. I still have Gray, Rudy, and Vlad, but I'll put like, you know, like the pitcher list one. I like, you know, Saris because his changes a lot. It's like the
a lot.
What is it?
Stuff.
Yes. Stuff and command deck. It's like, you know, so his are different. So I like to have that in there. And then like Paul Spores or something like that. I'll have, I've got more columns to the left of my pitchers. And then, you know, closers, who knows, right? You know, I kind of tier my closers and then I'm just going, but that's really kind of what my draft board likes. And I put like tiers in there and I've got highlighted for these are tiers I like, you know, orange, these are tiers I don't like. Bright orange, these guys are hurt. Stay away from them, you know?
So I like that though, because it's kind of, I guess, more, I don't, you know, do all of that you do, but like certain people like Toby, and do so and all of them, it's straight up computer numbers, boom, this is what I do.
I'm not that guy.
No. And like, we have a lot of, like, we're almost the same age. I write everything down that I do. And, I might have an Excel sheet with my ranking stuff. One of it's very similar stuff.
Yeah.
But that's why I wanted to ask you, because there's so many different ways to draft and so many different ways to do it. Like, Jenny's got a question we'll talk about in a bit, but she wrote a great article in the FTN guide about the different the flow charts. It was so genius. Like, it's so simple, but not. Like, it makes so much sense the way she does it, and she spends so much time doing that. But that's kind of her background.
I thought that article from Jenny was awesome.
It was outstanding, because that's what it goes back to my statement earlier about like learn from other people. Yeah. That it just opened my mind up to so many scenarios like that I didn't even think about, that when you sit back, you're like, okay, that makes way too much sense. Why did I not think about this before? But the way she put it together and how she's been doing it forever is what reason she's successful. And it's funny, like Ryan Bloomfield, he talks about his, he builds his draft backwards and he likes.
It's a good thing. I do that, especially main event wise. I'm doing that. I do it a little bit in OCs, but main event, you've got to have those last six or seven rounds sort of planned out where you're going to go at, what are your targets there? And you've got to build it backwards like that. I don't know how you can be successful not thinking about those late rounds.
100%. You have to have that safety valve. Like, okay, 15 teams wild, things are going to go wrong. You have to be able to adjust. Now when you're in round like 26 and you know your team's short, where are you going?
I start out my notebook, you know, once my KDS runs, I've got every round written down and I've got 2, 3, 4, 5 targets for almost every like set. If you're towards the end, sort of a 2 set of rounds, but if you're in the middle, kind of each round, I mean, I've written out those targets before we started and they're in my draft board, but Rudy's been on me lately about using like his war room or, you know, I know a lot of people use Rotolab. I'm almost definitely going to do it this year for the first time. Because I have that live auction in Vegas.
Yeah, I think that'd be clutch.
I think you just got to have it for an auction. I mean, it's one thing for my home league to go in there. Like, I'm one of the 2 or 3 most prepared person going in my home league draft because I've been doing all of these NFBC drafts. A lot of those guys playing either just that league or a couple leagues. So I can kind of wing the auction a little bit, but I can't wing that auction.
This will be the first year I've already purchased Rotolab. So I'll be doing that just because you can input all your own stuff. You can tweak it however you want. So it's still your deal.
Yeah. But, my draft board, I can literally just put in a Rotolab.
Exactly. Like, but at least it's there to kind of, to give you like a safety check. Like, hey,
what everybody else has left, like how many guys are out there looking for saves and steals. I mean, I'm going to need that.
Well, yeah, because I used to not be a guy like that either. But then last year, I purchased Derrick Rhodes' best ball thing for Fantrax. It was like $5 bucks or something. And it opened my eyes to so many things. Drafting that I'm not against all that stuff. I'm just usually too stupid to figure it out.
I've been using this draft, you know, a creature of habit. My draft board has looked mostly the same for a long time.
It's working for you.
It works, you know. And I know how to use it. I know what I'm doing. And I can just, you know. I've got my formula set up so my ADP can like flip between cut line and OC and whatever. I mean,
One thing you mentioned, I meant to ask you earlier in the show, because for those that do 12 teams, 15 teams, DCs, OCs, whatever, you have KDS and you pick where you want to go. You mentioned that the cut line, the 10 team does not do KDS, which I did not know that. So obviously you're literally at the mercy of how it falls.
Yeah.
Do you have a preference on where you're going? Because it's 10 leagues, so 10 teams, so it doesn't feel like it's as necessary to have a certain spot, but it still could be. So how do you feel 1 through 10 in that situation?
I like to be in the middle in cut lines, just because when I'm at the end, I feel like I kind of miss out on, I wouldn't call them necessarily, they're not runs in the same way that they are in roto leagues, where it's like a run of closers or a run of all the speed guys that everybody likes in that range. But there are a couple spots in the draft where there are kind of mini runs, like those shortstops, you know, Story, Bogarts, Lindor, Tim Anderson, and maybe even Wander. They're all going in like a 15 pick range, and you can miss out on all of them. Or around that 100, you know, spot 100 to 110. There's a bunch of the multi-position eligibility guys that I like to get some of, like Cronenworth, Ty France, DJ LeMahieu. Like, you can kind of miss out on those guys. And so I really like to be able to sort of take a pick each 10 picks or so. But I also want to get enough spots in each one, because a lot of times in those first four or five rounds, that's how you really differentiate your team.
Because they diversification, you have to draft.
I don't want to have the same team over and over and over again, you know? I don't want to have, like, even though I love Jose Ramirez this year, because he's both awesome, you know, doesn't seem to be an injury risk at all, and third base is kind of shitty. Excuse me, the language.
No, you're fine.
And but I don't want it to, if I'm in 5 and 6, I can't take a ton of Jose Ramirez. I mean, it's dangerous. Dangerous to be, over in on one guy that's early.
And that's the thing, is it's like, I've heard other people say it. It's like, if I do two drafts, and I have like the top pick, okay, I'm going to take Trey Turner with one and Jose with the second, or I'll take Trey Turner with one, Garrett Cole with the second, whatever, just so I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket, because God forbid something happens and the whole thing's up in smoke.
Like your two most important drafts right at the end of March, like you can't have the same first round draft pick.
And it makes sense. It's tough to do, because like I want Trey Turner or Jose Ramirez pretty much every time, but it makes sense. It makes total sense. And it's funny, because most of my drafts, I've done 10 so far, I've been in the back like 4 or 5 in every one except like 2. So I looked at my player shares the other day.
Of outfielders.
It stinks because there's so many of the same players, and I was like,
that back of the cut line are like a bunch of those outfielders, like Harper and Acuna and Trout and Betts and Tucker, and like if you end up in those 8, 9, 10 spots, like you could end up with a lot of teams that look a lot alike.
We know third base is rough. There's probably a few others. Are there any positions that you're more aggressive on than others? I know we kind of mentioned outfield. You try to be, just because there's 5, but just in general, because I guess scarcity per se, is there like positions you're more interested in?
Yeah, I don't really practice position scarcity per se, but I do in cut line at least want to get one of those first 4 third basemen if I can. I really want to get one of those top 2 tiers, whatever you want to call it, shortstops. Like by the time you hit Lindor, I want to have one of those guys. And then I want a couple of those real stud outfielders. Okay. You know, it'll be a little bit different in Roto, I think, because I think I'm really going to want one of those guys with a bunch of stolen bases in the first round. Your Trey Turner, your Tatis, your Jose Ramirez, you know. It's kind of hard to leave that first round, I think, even in a 12-team league without a lot of stolen bases. So, like, it makes Vlad a tough pick. Right. And I want the option that if Freddie Freeman slips in the second round, I want to be able to take him, because I like Freddie Freeman in those late teens, in cut line, definitely. But I think even in OCs, or, you know, I'd be all about taking like a Freddie Freeman, but you've got to have 25, 30 stolen bases in the first round to take him.
Yeah. It makes a little difference. That's why he's definitely hard to take in those formats, but the cut line point system makes a lot easier. Some of the big dog catchers are going earlier in cut lines. Look at the ADP right now.
Real early.
Like I saw Salvi's ADP is 18, JT's is 30. Like that's, for those keeping track at home, early. How do you approach the catchers? Because you already mentioned if you had to take a zero anywhere, you want it to be catcher, even though you don't want a zero. But, you know, and I get it. Like those guys are your at-bat guys at catcher. Like, that's why they even go early in redraft systems.
Exactly.
But how are you about the catchers?
So I do like to get one of those top, is it 6 or 7 before Grandal, Wilson Contreras? I want to have one of those guys just as my kind of anchor. And then I like to get, you know, one to two more by the time you hit, say, Elias Diaz, Alejandro Kirk area, which is like early 200s in cut line. I think there's something to be said for taking two of those top guys, honestly, because catcher's so bad after like, say, 15 of them. They're putting up nothing. And if you look last year, Sal Perez was all over the top 20 teams. He put 4.8 points up a game, and non-small sample size division, Grandal was next at 4 flat. So he's almost 25% better than Grandal, and Grandal only had, whatever, 250 probably at-bats. So, I mean, he was so valuable last year. So there's definitely an argument to be had for, like, taking him early. And I do have I have taken Sal Perez really early. I have no Will Smith yet, but I want him. But, I mean, he's going 34th in the last month. JT Realmuto is going 30th. So, I mean, those are three guys going to the first 35 picks. It's hard to take two of them. But I would love to have – I'd love to come out of a draft soon with Will Smith and Grandal, you know, just to have one of those teams that's got two of them, you know, or Sal and Wilson Contreras or something like that.
I wonder what pushed Grandal up so much. At first I was thinking, oh, maybe it's because of OBP. But I know the second half he started crushing it. But
yeah, he was crushing it, man. That's arguably the best lineup in baseball. All right, and he gets on base a lot, so even though walks don't help in cut line, scoring runs does.
Scoring runs, yeah, definitely. Do you see yourself, like, I know Casey Cha does it in some, do you see yourself in cut lines potentially stacking teams more than others?
I don't really do it as a general rule. I'm not looking for it, but I've heard Casey Cha talk about it. I've heard Vlad talk about it, like stacking. There's definitely offenses that I want pieces of, and there were like Blue Jays all over, all the top everything last year, right? So I definitely have a lot of like White Sox and Blue Jays kind of higher up on my board. So you'll see sort of natural stacks, but it's not something that's even really in the back of my mind.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of those kind of DFS philosophies, but it's tough it's tough to do in a draft for sure. To make all that pan out. But I do like it. The more we talked about it and I look at it, the scoring, because for the Fantrax people out there where it's almost more OBP centric, like you said, they tried to make it for a 5x5 format. So it does actually equate pretty darn good.
Yeah.
It's just the size of the teams and the weights for wins, saves, steals, and homers kind of dictates a few things that make it a little different. But overall, it still helps quite a bit. With the ever-changing wins landscape, does that change your pitching approach at all?
It is good to have pitchers on good teams. I mean, that sounds easy to say, right? But if you've got one of those really good, you know, ratio guys, like an Alcantara, seems like somewhat of a lock for single digit wins. I mean, that's tough. That hurts. Those wins are, what are they, 8 points? I mean, wins are big. So, you know, your fourth or fifth starter, like a Tanner Houck or something like that. I mean, he could be really good on a good Red Sox team, or, you know, a lot of people are a little maybe down on Gausman this year, but like Blue Jays are going to win a lot of games.
Yep.
You know, he goes six innings and I don't care if he gives up three or four runs. I mean, he's going to get, what do you think his floor is this year if he stays healthy? 14 wins? I mean,
yeah, he's going to get you probably going to get you like at least a K per nine.
Yeah. So, yeah. 14 wins. Like Sands ratios kind of suck, but like that's super valuable. I mean, those extra points they add up. But it's not like I'm, you know, shying away from the bad teams, but I'm definitely thinking about it as I'm in. I love Lance Lynn. Like, Dylan Cease is getting pushed up by everybody, but it pays to be on that, you know, a White Sox pitcher.
definitely. I'm running out of ideas because there's so many good things here. Is there any other tips that you could give people in your years of cut line experience? All, you know, almost set, this would be year six of cut line.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're seven.
You're seven. Sorry, started 2016. So,
yeah.
Any other tips you can give people? Because I love this conversation. There's so many similarities, still so many little tweaks that make it different. So, what do you got?
Yeah, I think, you know, I guess first off, there's a lot of ways to do it. Like, nobody is really, we did have a guy just win the number one overall that had done it a few years ago. So you got your first multi-time, like, first overall cut line guy. But there's not really like a secret method. It's really, you want to avoid injuries, but you always want to avoid injuries, right?
Yeah.
Multi-position eligibility really helps because of that, you know, the way they put those puzzle pieces together. But you want bulk and you want to be healthy. You got to really treat those fab periods like they are the most important thing, because you can't mess up those fab periods. You got to get a couple of those hot guys. You got to cut dead weight. I think maybe sort of the biggest edge I have left is like cutting dead weight. If that guy is not getting saves, cut him. If he's hurt, if he's going to be out 3 more weeks, think about cutting him unless he's Mike Trout. And that didn't work to hold on to Mike Trout last year, of course. But if they're hurt, cut him. Like, be ruthless. You know, even if he's a top 100 player, as long as he's not a top 20 player, I think you got to cut weight. You can always, if you cut him in that first period, you can always pick him back up in the second period.
True.
You do sometimes regret it, but that, if I had one thing that's the most important, I'd say cut weight. I made a mistake last year. I stuck with your boy, Mauricio Dubon. I don't know if he's actually your boy, but he's on the Giants.
I love him.
Great eligibility.
Yep.
He had been good the year before.
Yep.
And I kept him. I mean, and man, he was zeros.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I drafted him in so many leagues. I had cut him in a lot of places, but
yeah.
it hurt to cut. It was tough for me to cut him just because the eligibility was still on the roster. Yeah. He wasn't sent down. Once he was sent down, it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was still on the roster. He just was not playing. He
played like twice a week.
All the pretending they were doing, just not playing.
It was so frustrating. But watch this year. He'll come and tear it up with very little multi-position eligibility, and no one wants to touch him. So that's how it always goes.
Yeah. Cut weight, lots of contingency plans on the fab. You know, have 20. Don't be afraid to have 20 on there. 25. I mean, you know, you can't have too many because you don't want it to run and you not get somebody.
I almost need you to come on for fab just to, like, not to give away your players, but
yeah.
that's what even got me last year in Raz Slam. So I was playing that with them, and even the second period, I had so many contingencies. I thought I had it all covered, and I still left with like $6 and stuff. It was just like, what in the world is going on here? It's insane, because that was just one league. You're doing 20 something leagues.
Yeah.
Like, cause you have like one player, for those that don't know that well, one player with like 20 bids below it, and then you change them all around. Like, the one thing that bugs me sometimes is I want to move around. Like, so say you have like 10 guys at $1 each. It's almost the order you click them in. I want to be able to like just move that around.
Yeah.
That's what I want. That would be nice. Instead of having to delete, then reorder how you put them in. Yeah. I just want to click on my guys.
You can like sort of press on them and slide them up. Yeah. It does work to do that. And if you slide them up, if you have a guy that's like $2 here and a guy $1 here, if you slide the $1 guy above the $2 guy, he'll become a $2 guy.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. See, I'm learning
the same thing. If you slide them down, they'll drop in value. If you slide the $2 guy below the $1 guy, he'll become a $1 guy.
There we go. We're learning things here on Bench with Bubba. This is what I'm talking about.
I learn stuff on the NFBC all the time, and I play in, you know, 40 leagues a year on there, and I still learn new things all the time.
Yeah, I had no idea about that, because that's one of the more, even in just regular fab leagues, I get so frustrated going, okay, I want the third pitcher I have down here. I want him to be my first option.
Yeah.
I don't want. Like...
So you can do it. Just click and slot him.
Oh, man. See, I feel like an idiot.
They might have some arrows. I think they have arrows, too.
That would be so much nicer. I've
done fab, but.
Beautiful. Beautiful. We got a couple questions here, and we kind of covered them, but we'll rehash it real quick here. Jenny Butler had a question. How does he like to allocate his money between the first and second fab periods? Again, hit on that. I know a lot of people spend more during the first one, but I always have as much. I've always saved as much money as I could for the second. You recommend kind of going the opposite, go crazy.
Yeah, I do tend to spend up. I'm not afraid to spend up early because there's so many people in your, like, half your league is not participating in the second one. But if you don't have $600 left, you're not going to get that number one guy. Then I think Framber Valdez was dropped a lot early because of his finger or something like that.
And then Eloy.
He went for $500-$600 in every single league. I didn't get him I got him in maybe either one or none of 20-some leagues last year because I do spend up in that first period. Even if I only have one of those teams that only has to replace like two or three guys, I tend to spend a few hundred bucks. And there's some team that has $900 left and it's going to drop $650, $700 on that top guy. But you do have to think about it differently than, like you said, the OCs and the mains and stuff, because you're not rationing it out. It's only two periods. But I do tend to, if I have seven, eight spots, I'll spend up in that first period.
Yeah, you got to fill them up, like you said, because if you don't get them there, it doesn't even matter what the second period is. You're pretty much done anyway, so you got to get there. Anthony Gialdi says, is it more beneficial to have a lot of closers to fill in the gaps each week or just go for starters and innings all the way through your staff? If a mixture, how many closers do you prefer? How many total pitchers on your roster? We talked about that.
Yeah.
Thanks in advance for the 2022 ass whippings.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to meeting him out in Vegas too. I like to have around 18 pitchers. If I get a really stacked team with a lot of like flexibility, I'll push it up to 19. I do prefer starters as a general rule. I prefer power to speed. I prefer starters to closers as a general rule, but I'm not afraid to take those closers if they drop. I like to have, say, between three and five closers if I have closers. Not that I wouldn't just have one, but it's kind of the strategy of having a few of them. So because they kind of fluctuate in a similar manner, where starters are kind of a different beast. You can't beat like the two-start week. Like the two-start week is so valuable if they're both good, of course, but it's hard to beat that. But a three-save week is huge. There's just not as many three-save weeks as there used to be, it seems like. Even for teams that are decent, a lot of times they don't like to use their closer maybe three games in a row or something like that as the team gets hot, but he doesn't get all the saves. You do a lot of closer because so many closers lose their job. You do tend to pick up more closers in the fab periods. Like you've got them in your contingency. You've got maybe the best 6, 7, 8 starters in there, but 9, 10, 11, 12, it's like, well, those are the new closers, the Dylan Flores of the world and stuff like that. And those guys have value. But those guys can also lose their job like a week later. Yeah. It was either, you know, the last year or the year before that, the Rays, of course, you know, everybody's closing nightmare. But they had a guy get saves on like Monday and Tuesday. And then fab runs Tuesday night. And I throw that guy up my thing. I mean, he is not the closer 3 days later.
That would be Kittredge, by the way. I remember that one very clearly.
And Merriweather. Yes. The Blue Jays
Got hurt.
He was the big one early last year, and I bought him on like 6 or 7 teams in that first fab.
Yep.
He was huge. He was going to be the closer on the Blue Jays, right?
Yep.
So it's bought him in OCs and mains, but I also bought him in cut lines.
Yep.
So, and that one really hurt. I think we got one out from him, either one out or one inning. And
yeah, it wasn't much. It was one outing. I know that much. Yeah.
Just dead weight.
But see, there's a couple good take homes there. The power over speed, if you had to pick one, which is like almost a flip from other processes.
That's right.
So that's a big mindset. And I guess it makes sense because home runs are worth more than steals, and you can get way more home runs than steals. So that makes sense. And then kind of innings and Ks type situation over saves in general.
Yeah, and over ratios too sometimes, right? Like, your Marcus Stroman is valuable because he puts up innings, but that type of pitcher isn't as valuable because he's not having those 10 strikeout games.
See, that's the mindset. That's what I kind of wanted to get to on this show. So that's perfect. It's like, it's nothing against the player, and it's not that they're not good fantasy players, but for this format, it's a different type of breed. So like, even you mentioned Alcantara, amazing pitcher, and I can win that many games. So it's like when you're comparing two players to pick, Alcantara is probably the better pitcher, but at that point in the draft, you might want to go for someone else with higher ratios.
And he does. I mean, he's falling probably a little bit further than maybe he should have. He's going 51st right now in the last month. So it's still a very valuable pick. And around that same time, same spot, you can get Julio Urias 3 picks earlier. Well, on the Dodgers, I mean, he's going to put up
a ton of wins
like that, right? So,
I should have asked you earlier on these cut lines. Are they all live drafts? Do they have slow drafts? How are they going about them?
I've been doing a lot of the 4-hour ones. The only live one I've done is the B-flat. So I tend to like the 4-hour ones because after round 30, it cuts in half. Okay. So 2 hours is just fine, but 1 hour is tough.
That's it. Like I've been doing like my DCs or NFBC 50s. It's been a lot of like the 2 hours, but then when it goes down to one, if you're on the West Coast like I am, and just a random weekend where I might get to go to sleep till like 7 in the morning, you can get sniped because all these East Coast guys wake up and make like 6 picks, and you thought you had plenty of time, and you didn't. And it's just
right. I mean, I tend to like it, you know, it freezes at 2 a.m. and opens at 8 a.m. on the East Coast, I think. And I tend to stay up until at least like midnight most nights. That still leaves 2 hours. And then taking my kid to school when I'm getting ready for work in the morning. And, you know, you can auto pick. And if you're near a turn, you can auto pick twice. Yep. I'm usually well prepared to auto pick once. A double auto pick can be brutal.
Yeah, like I always say, I have my cue. Like I got stuff just in case things happen, but still, it never feels right. Like you feel like you missed something, and it's just like, oh man.
So I'll do the live cut lines too, and I will say the live cut line, the slow cut lines, and maybe this is the same. There are live DCs, right?
Yes, there are. Yes, there are.
The slow ones tend to hug ADP a little tighter and kind of
makes sense.
Flow the same. Live ones are wilder. So I like to have a good mix of slower ones and wilder ones, because I'll make, you know, some mistakes in the live ones, but like guys will drop, you know, and you'd be like, oh yeah, I was choosing between these two guys here. I got the other guy the next time. Whereas a slow one, like I don't tend to slide quite as much.
All right. Well, you got me convinced. I might have to jump in a cut line. Like Let's this is this. I love this. Well, I'm not going to get one with you, but that's the problem. I always joke about it because there's like Fish and all those guys.
Yeah.
It does. If you're in on any NFBC draft, there's going to be like at least four or five dudes. You're just like,
that's right.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Your list can only be so long of, I want to avoid these guys. Right.
Yeah.
Especially when you get into like main season.
Yep.
I've got everyone's going. I've got to kind of avoid. And I've got another 30 that I know these guys are really good. And then there's guys I don't know that are also really good.
Yep.
There's no, you know, fish. There's no fish. There's not a lot of fish out there in the NFBC world. Right. Yep. And not that guy, you know, he's good at his DCs, but it's like, there's not a lot of dead money. There's some, but there's not a lot.
Yeah. There's not much. You get the occasional where you're just like, what are you doing? But
And they jump in, and it's usually like me when I played my first main 6 years ago. I mean, I was dead money. I had no chance that week.
Like that's what, you know, Curtis is being nice now, but that's what they're gonna say about me and my first cut line. I'm gonna be like, just throwing stuff at the wall.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. You can only avoid with so many guys, and in main events, like whatever, you're going to have like two legends in your draft, you know?
All right, we have one question in the chat. It's probably not cut line related, but we can talk about it real quick here. Is Josh Rogers a sneaky ad for the Nationals? I've looked at him in DCs because it's like pick 700.
Oh, yeah.
But not a big strikeout guy. But he is projected to be in the rotation, and he'll throw innings. So in that format, it's great. But other than that, no.
So is he the projected fifth starter right now?
He's projected fifth right now. Obviously, that can change. This is word of those. We wish we had more information. But he finished the year, I believe, in the rotation. He made a handful of starts towards the end of the year.
Okay. And what about Joe Ross? Because he had that, like, he was a bad pickup and drop several times last year because he had some really good runs.
He's injured, and I can't get
a still hurt. Okay.
I haven't got a final, like, where his situation is, so I've just been avoiding him. Yeah. Like, there's a handful of them I just don't even bother with right now because we have nothing.
Yeah, so. if they ended the year like Clayton Kershaw, Lance McCullers, Zach Eflin, who I had a lot of last year, they're basically off my draft board.
Yeah.
You know,
speaking of that, for cut lines, like how do you deal with guys like Clevinger and Syndergaard?
I have taken one Syndergaard so far. The good thing about Clevinger and Syndergaard is that they're going after 200. Okay. I tend to avoid guys coming off shoulder or elbow injuries. And it's not just like, I know those guys are good pitchers, but you need them to not only be good and at the beginning, but you need them to be good those last 3 weeks of the season. I'm trying to be in that top 20 and finish top five. I mean, what are the chances that Clevinger and Syndergaard are pitching then?
100%. Not good. I get like, you. Not good. I agree.
Strasburg, the same way. Like, those guys are awesome. Well, I'm not even sure Noah Syndergaard is awesome. He looks awesome. He's got the hair. He's got the body. Like,
exactly.
But, I mean, he hasn't actually been good in a few years.
Yeah, he's been kind of middle of the pack.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to have very many shares. I would say less than two of each of those guys. I have Lance McCullers in my dynasty team, so I'm not really going to take him anywhere else. I already feel like I have my exposure.
There you go. And that's kind of one of like the injury situation. I know you like to draft a little safer, like I do as well, and kind of avoid that. But yeah, they also could be a value type thing.
They could be. Yeah, no, that's right. Interesting. That's right. And Chris Sale is one of those guys. Like, yeah. He pitched a decent number of innings last year. He's probably too old to baby. Yeah. So
that's how I feel about Verlander.
Like, he can throw 156 innings. Oh, yeah. Verlander, throw until his arm falls off.
Yeah, I don't. He's one of the ones that people, some like those injury gurus, think I'm still crazy. But like Spohr feels the same way I do. And I've said it since first pitch Arizona when I drafted him. I said they signed him for a reason, which means he can pitch. He's shown he can pitch. They're going to throw him until his arm falls off, like you said. Yeah, they have no reason not to throw him.
Yeah, I have taken in that range where he's going 112 right now in cut line. I have taken Manoah, Cease, Darvish instead. But I'm not safer, totally against. I need at least one or two Verlanders just in case he is Justin Verlander again.
Exactly. If he comes back, he's like the first or second round pick.
He could be that guy. I don't know.
Right? Striking out 10 plus a game, winning every other start or something.
Yeah. especially for the Astros, right? I mean, these guys are super valuable.
Yeah, so that's a game changer, especially in a cut line format. And again, if he comes into spring training and things look bad, you can cut him, like you said, April 12th.
Yeah, it's hard. You don't really want to drop too many guys in that pick 100. Especially Justin Verlander. You can drop them. Because you're taking a shot on that upside, you're trying to win it all.
Yep, and that's kind of the happy medium. Like they talk about the overall competitions. Do you want to play to win your league? Do you want to play to win the whole thing?
There's different ways to go about it. You're playing to win it all.
Yeah.
They don't pay a ton of money out to the league. I mean, this year is up to $175 buy-in, and you can get that down buying like packs. A lot of people buying 3-pack, 6-pack, 9-pack. You get that down a little bit into the 150s, but I think it pays $350 to first, and then this year for the first time they're going to pay second for $150. Before it was like $150 to get in, $300 first, nothing second.
Oh boy,
you're only doubling your money for first. Like it is all about the overall. Whereas in the OC and the main, I really think like you have to think about the overall because enough of your money is going to it that you'd be sort of silly not to think about it. But you play to win your league, and if the overall comes, it comes.
That's my mindset in those two, and that's why like Zach Waxman was on my show and he broke down like, well, if you need a punt category, it's not crazy, and you won't win the overall, but you can still win your league type thing. Like the mindset changes, like you said.
You do need to think about that sometime. Like, I used to think about that not at all or too late. I'm always just like trying to like stay, do the thing. And then I think like Scott Jenstad was talking about it. He's like, it's around the All-Star break where you need to know, hey, guy, I'm not finishing top 20 in the overall, but I can cash in this league.
Yep.
And so I'm punting stolen bases or I'm punting saves.
Yep.
And you got to make that. If you make that switch too late, it's not going to work. But you make it at the All-Star break, it works.
And that's what I love about the content that's out there and just NFBC in general. And it applies to Yahoo's and ESPN's and whatever format you play in.
Yeah.
But it's the way your mind changes by playing with all these really good players that you kind of it makes you a better player for sure.
Yeah.
So I like just those little things you can think of to – it's like when you're playing with your buddies, there's no overall. But like how often back in the days you go, I'm just going to punt, mid-season. You wouldn't have. But now you could do it every season and probably beat them every single time.
Yeah, and I don't punt anything in the draft. Like I want to options open.
For sure.
But you got to be willing to make that change happen through the year.
Yep, 100%, 100%.
And you can win the league. Like you can punt a category and win a 12-team league.
Most definitely. And like I said, Zach broke it down for some format. The difference, like if you took a 2 points in say saves compared to the 12 that you'd get from standard gains points, the difference to be in like the top 85% now instead of 80% isn't as much as you think. You can definitely make a couple tweaks and make some magic happen. So it's very, very interesting to think because some people you have that mindset you're just screwed. It's over.
Yeah.
I'm done. But you're
You gotta watch like those categories, and that's why like the more leagues you play, the harder it gets for numerous reasons. But FAB becomes harder, Signal Hands becomes harder. But really, I like to say by mid season, I'm like, where am I lagging? I am 6 stolen bases away from 5 extra points. Like I need to sort of think about that each time. And the more leagues you have, the more time intensive it becomes to really do FAB right. It's not easy.
Are we believing in Charlie Morton this year?
Yeah.
I had to ask you a Braves question.
it's brutal to lose him like that, but to still to win like without Acuna or Morton on the field at the end of the day is crazy. Yep. Our pitching was decimated halfway through the World Series. I mean, but that's like an ankle injury, like a, you know, like,
that's why I'm not worried. It's nothing with his arm.
I'm not worried. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he was a super value last year, and really, like, he's going 106 this year. I mean, he's in cut line at least. I don't know where he's going in DCs, but I'm not shying away from him. But there are a lot of pitchers I like right in that. It's not like I'm going to get him everywhere. Like last year, I had a ton of Gausman because I really liked him, like, right there. I don't have, like, one guy that I'm, like, really honed in on yet. There's three or four of them in that range.
All right. Well, I will let you go. It's getting late on your side, but this was an awesome conversation. Talking cut line here, I'm actually, like, I'm not even just BSing. I'm, like, pretty pumped to go check us out some more because it's just it's a fun format, and drafting a 10-team league just sounds like so much fun. Like, you get to draft these, like, loaded teams that, you know, at least
don't get used to it. You know, they don't all look like those 10-team leagues.
Yeah, not a chance. I'll go back to reality real quick. But doing so many 15s like DCs here lately, like a 10 feels pretty nice, a little cleansing of the soul, basically.
Yeah.
So you got to check that out for sure. But again, any final thoughts before we head on out of here?
No, dude, it's draft season. You know, we just want baseball. Please give us baseball.
Yeah, all this mumbo jumbo. I'm believing in it until we hit March. Then it'll get fun. Then it'll get fun. Yeah. So let's hope the billionaires, you know, don't mind being like 1,000,000.99.
Exactly.
Like little things. But everybody, go check out Curtis on Twitter at Jones Curtis W Cujo, as you can find him on there. And thanks for joining me, man. Had a blast talking to you.
Thanks, Bo. Really appreciate the invite. Happy draft season, and you know, praying for baseball.
Yep, definitely. I'll see you in the cut line streets. But for everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 435. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.